This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
From AMI Central.
Now circling in the neutral zone.
Here's the pitch on the way. 36 yards for the win.
This.
Here comes a big chance. The shot.
Is
this the tiger?
The neutral zone.
This is as good as it gets.
Now, here's your host, two-time Paralympian, Brock Richardson.
Good afternoon, everybody. How's it going? It's 4 o'clock on a Friday. It's time for another edition of The Neutral Zone. I am indeed your host, Brock Richardson, and I'm going to take a little dive away from parasports just for a flash, because we've been focused on parasports for the last 3 weeks, because that's what has been going on with the Paralympic Games. But first, let's bring in our co-host for today, Cam Jenkins. Cam, how are you?
I'm doing okay. It's a beautiful day out today, and I've really been enjoying the Paralympics that have been going on. And a couple more days, they're done Sunday. So really looking forward to that. And to Cruiser Sport athletes, Austin Smink, he's racing tonight. And then also Renee Fussell, she's throwing tomorrow morning at 6:30 in the morning, which is a Saturday Eastern Standard Time. So yeah, looking forward to rounding off the Paralympics.
Yes, absolutely. And rounding off our co-hosting team, nice segue, Cameron. Thank you for that one, is Josh Watson. How are you, Josh?
I am good, gentlemen. It is great to be here on a Friday. And Cam, you are absolutely right. It is gorgeous outside. Looking forward to the end of the Paralympics and some other sports and just enjoying the long weekend outside of the 2 days I get to work.
Yes, always always fun. It's too bad you got to work on a long weekend, but these are the joys of retail, as everybody knows, whoever works retail
as
out there.
As we often
guys,
say.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I thought you were going to say, as we often say, something, and I cut you off there. Guys, to kick off the show, I got a little bit of breaking news for you. Okay, so we know now for 2022 that the NHLers will be represented by players in the Olympics. So that's 2022 in Beijing. NHL players will represent their country. So that's cool. Quick thoughts from both of you on that. Cameron, what say you?
I think it's great. When you think Olympics, you think that you want the best players there. And the NHL players are the best in the world. So naturally, they should be in the Olympics. So I'm real happy that they came to an agreement today and that they're going to be participating.
I agree. I am very glad to see that we're going to have a best-on-best tournament. That's the way it should be. I just wish they hadn't dragged this out so long, because I mean, we all had a good idea that this is what was going to happen, but here we are. We finally have the announcement. It's about time.
Yeah, it was one of those announcements that we kind of thought maybe was coming, because after the last Winter Olympic Games, they said, oh, you know, with it being in Beijing, we want to get the sport of hockey out there a little bit more. So we kind of knew this was coming, but I agree with you both. It's a bit late in the game, but hey, better late than never, as they say. So that's your breaking news to kick off the show. Let's get into our regular headlines.
Dinesh Priyantha wins the first ever Paralympic gold medal for the country of Sri Lanka. He set a new world record and claimed gold in men's javelin throw F46 category at the Tokyo 2020 Paralympic Games. I have a colleague at work who is from Sri Lanka, and he was showing me all of the news in regards to this achievement, and the country is very excited. He is an athlete who is involved with the military and has earned a promotion as a result of his achievement. So congratulations, Dinesh Priyantha.
Canada currently has 4 gold, 10 silver, and 6 bronze. Some of your highlights include Danielle Doris with one gold and one silver. And we also have Aurélie Rivard with five medals all told. This was a great thing for swimming. They just really kicked it up a notch. And congratulations to everybody who has won a medal at this point in the games with left to go.
Avani Lakkara wins historic shooting gold for India. The 19-year-old athlete enters the history books after becoming the first woman from India to win a gold medal in shooting at an Olympic and Paralympic Games. And, you know, a few other statistics as far as it goes with her. She was also at the Paralympics and created history of winning two medals in a single Paralympic game.
Yes.
Multiple medalist in Paralympics.
Canadian bocce athlete and world number one Alison Levine had an early exit in her individual competition and apologized to the country for letting them down. She's looking forward to the pairs competition. Alison, I hope you're listening to this because you have nothing to apologize for. This is a major pet peeve of mine, which I know we're going to talk about later in the show, but it just... You made the Paralympic Games. You have absolutely nothing to apologize for. Every athlete has a bad day, and sometimes that bad day happens on the biggest stage. You will get them next time.
Let's check in on our Twitter poll questions from last week. The question was, are you taking in the Paralympic Games? And I have to tell you, I'm really surprised this was not unanimous. We had 94% say yes and 6% say no. And then this week's Twitter poll question, what type of sport has you most intrigued at the Paralympic Games? Is it team, individual, or both? Cast your votes at our Twitter handles, which will be given out later in the program. Coming up next, we're going to be chatting with Zach Modell, who's a Canadian rugby athlete who's returned home from Tokyo. We'll chat with him all about his experience and his career. Stay with us. You're listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. Welcome back to The Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, joined by Cam Jenkins and Joshua Watson. We're just working on getting Zach. While we do that, guys, let's chat a little bit about wheelchair rugby. We know now that the Canadian team had a fifth place finish. What did you make of their tournament overall? Josh, start with you and then move over to Cam.
Overall, I enjoyed the games I got to see. I thought they played well. It's just the sport, as wild and crazy and quite frankly hazardous as it is, just I think has really grown in the world, and the teams around them have gotten a lot better. So, I mean, kudos to them for getting there in the first place. And I don't think a five seed or a fifth place finish is anything to be disappointed about.
Yeah, not at all. I think Canada, you know, they played fairly well. They had a bit of a rough start. They kind of won their last couple of games against, I believe it was New Zealand as well as France. And, you know, it's just, it's such a rough sport. And I was really intrigued, and I don't know if it was the Canada game, but I was really intrigued with how you're supposed to score as many points as possible, but near, it looks like the end of a half, one of the teams, they weren't trying to score. They were just trying to keep it away and trying to run the time down. So I just kind of found that real interesting because it wasn't at the end of the game, but it was like around approximately halftime or after the first quarter. So I kind of wondered why you wouldn't still be trying to rack up as many points as possible.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, especially because my counter argument was going to be, was it near the end of the game? And the answer is no. So yeah, I don't understand that strategy as well. The other thing I kind of found interesting was that there is such a thing as player timeouts and coaches timeouts. And they're both used for various reasons because you've only got like 40 seconds, I believe it is, to get the ball from one end to the other. So if you're running down on time, the players might call a timeout, but then they don't even go over to the bench. It's just more of a, hey, we just needed extra time because we, you know, didn't get over, we didn't want to turn the ball over, etc. So the strategy in the sport of rugby is very, you know, it's very intricate. It's not one of those things where you look at it and you go, well, okay, it's a matter of getting across the line and that's it. And I just found it very interesting, Josh. Josh, did you get any different feel on whether you want to play? I know when we did this preview, you were like, no, I don't want to do this. I'm good. Do you have any kind of change of heart?
Brock, I like where my fingers are currently located. So no, I do not see any reason to participate. I give those guys full credit for playing the way they do. I did have an opportunity when I was young to try the sport. So I can honestly say, no, it does not interest me because I have a rule that I don't eliminate something unless I've tried it. That goes for sports, that goes for food, you name it. But I've tried rugby. It's dangerous. No thanks.
Josh, you got to live a little here. Like, I think we should all like join a rugby team and do that and maybe try out for the Paralympic team. It's a phenomenal sport. And you play sledge hockey and you've been out and a goalie. How is that any more dangerous than playing on rugby? Like, to me, it's no different.
Did you see any equipment? I get to wear a helmet when I play hockey. I also get to wear gloves and I have a weapon in my hand.
I know, but the weapon you don't really use, you're not supposed to use. Do they have no equipment? Like, I know they don't necessarily have a helmet on, but do they have any body armor or anything underneath? Or is it just plain go there and, you know, off you go?
It's just the wheelchair from what I saw. And that's not enough for me. I like my fingers where they are and I like my brain unscrambled. So it's just not for me.
But, it's funny. Cameron, you bring up
I know that they wear gloves, but I don't know how much the gloves protect them because I don't know what's in the gloves or what kind of gloves that they have for murder balls. So,
yeah, it's an interesting point you bring up in the sense of unless there's something behind that very thin jersey, I'm not so certain there's much equipment there. And I think it's to try to mimic, conventional rugby when they don't have a lot of equipment, which also baffles me because they are literally like tackling each other as it goes, similar to wheelchair rugby, but still. Guys, I want to switch gears a little bit here to discuss some of the stories that we've seen from the Paralympic Games. I want to start with Brent Lakatos, who wins three medals thus far at the Games. And I want to focus on his 800-meter race. It was raining, for those of you that didn't get a chance to see the highlights and or on CBC Gem or any of the telecasts. But it was raining, and I mean like raining. Like the track was saturated in water. Like It was like literally splashing up into their hands. It was a disaster. Well, so I thought. And then Brent Lakatos does an interview and he says, well, I actually prefer it like that. And I really enjoyed it. And for me, guys, I'm sitting there going, okay, but I'd be worried about like slipping or tipping over or whatever. What did you make, Cameron, of that race and then subsequent comments?
You know, I thought it would be a lot harder to race in the rain, especially, you know, from watching it, how hard it seemed to be going down and kind of seeing the water puddles on the track as well. So to me, I thought it would be a lot harder to race in the rain. However, with Brent's comments, it seems like he almost prefers to race in the rain. So, but at the same time, I'm kind of thinking about it and I'm like, with all the humidity and heat with the rain, and I'm sure the humidity was gone with that, maybe it was a lot easier to race, even though it was raining out, because there's not a lot of humidity. So, you know, maybe that has something to do with it. It'd be really interesting to find out if they have different wheels that they use for rain, kind of like they do on race cars, gloves that they use for spinning the wheels or moving the wheels. I wonder if they have anything different for that. Just a lot of questions I have as far as now watching, racing in the rain compared to during the sunshine.
Okay, Mr. Watson, I have a question for you. And I know you're not a racer, but you do throw. Is there any difference, rain, hot, like... And I know it's not the same sport, but is there any difference in the rain that you could even pinpoint, even from a field perspective?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I think Mother Nature was trying to turn Tokyo's track and field stadium into a swimming pool, which I just can't imagine. I have been at meets where it has rained, and I believe personally that a rainy meet requires extra mental preparation or fortitude or however you want to say it. Because I don't know about Brent, he was going pretty quick, but in my case, I don't move quickly in rain. And so I end up looking like a drowned rat and feeling like one.
Right.
You end like up that. Cold, you end up stiff, you end up, at least for me, I end up feeling miserable. So I think it's very interesting what he had to say. Part of me does believe he's lying, to be quite honest. But as we've pointed out, I do think that if you have a choice between heat and humidity, which saps your energy in a different way, or rain and lack of humidity, for lack of a better way of putting it, then I suppose you would choose the rain just because you get a lot of energy loss when it's hot and humid, in my experience, unless you are hydrating yourself every 5 minutes and then you're having to go to the officials and ask for permission to be taken to a washroom because what goes in, let's be honest, has to come out.
Must come out. Yeah, no, totally. We're going to put a pin in the conversation. We're going to put a pin in the conversation for now because we do have Zach on the line. So we're going to take a break and come back. And we are going to be joined by Zach Madel, rugby player, 3-time Paralympian. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Ways to get in touch with the Neutral Zone on Twitter. Number one, at AMI Audio. Number two, at Neutral Zone BR. Number three, at Neutral Zone CB. Number four, at Neutral Zone Cam J. And number five, at J Watson 200. Now get out there and tweet one for the Gipper.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Buck Richardson, joined by Cam Jenkins and Josh Watson. And joining us now is Zach Medel, who is from Alberta and is a three-time Paralympian in wheelchair rugby. He was also the flag bearer in the closing ceremonies at the Toronto 2015 Para Pan Am Games. And he joins us now after returning from Tokyo. Zach, how are you? Welcome to the program.
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
Pretty good.
Zach, can we start off just by having you tell us a little bit about how you got involved with wheelchair rugby?
Yeah, so I had initially been a wheelchair basketball player before I stumbled onto wheelchair rugby. And I'd had a few people approach me that were involved in both of those sports communities. And just kind of let me know that the option of wheelchair rugby was out there. But I was quite enjoying myself with basketball and was pretty committed and wanting to see how far I could go with that sport. And decided one day to give wheelchair rugby a chance. And immediately fell in love with it. I mean, I grew up a lacrosse player before I had my amputations done and was really drawn to the contact and physical components of that game. And so finding something, a new way to kind of outlet for that physical aggression in a healthy way, I guess, of doing it was really life-changing for me.
And Zach, you got involved in the sport, as I understand, in about 2011. And it was only 1 year later that you had such an impact on the sport that you got to represent Canada at the 2012 Paralympic Games, and you won a silver medal. Can you talk a little bit about how you were able to manage or give such a great impact within just a year of starting the sport?
Oh man, it all happened very quickly. Like you said, I think my first ever rugby game was February 2011. So what's that? Just a year and a half prior to the games actually happening. And so, like I said, being a part of wheelchair basketball, a lot of the chair skills and the tactical components of the sports are quite similar. And so I already had a lot of the, the building blocks required to be a rugby player and a little bit of understanding of how to play. But I also had some of the best players in the sport on that Canadian team that really did a good job of kind of taking me under their wings and helping fast track me to get to that level that I needed to be.
And you were the flag bearer at the Toronto 2015 Para Pan Am Games. What was that like as an experience?
Oh, that was just a roller coaster of emotions at that point. We had just finished beating the Americans in gold medal game. And then the chef de mission at the time came into our locker room right after we finished. So we're on like an emotional high and everyone's excited and celebrating. And then they came in and dropped that bomb on me right afterwards. So it was just like one exciting piece of news after another. And the fact that I was selected to do that was truly a huge honor for myself to represent the country.
We're joined by Zach Medel, wheelchair rugby player who just represented Canada in Tokyo. And you're listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. I'm joined by Josh Watson and Cam Jenkins.
So, Zach, we've all been dealing with the pandemic for the last year and a half, a little bit more than that. Can you talk maybe a little bit about what it was like in Tokyo during the pandemic? Because I know the numbers over there were a little bit higher. And, what did you have to deal with there?
Yeah, it was definitely a different environment than we were used to. We're used to being able to go out and, I mean, if you're finished your event, able to go and support some of the other Canadian athletes and go check their events out live. Whereas this time around, we were pretty contained either within the village or within our own venue and field of play. So, I mean, you could kind of see some people around the dining hall that you might have seen in previous games and mingle a little bit that way as you're standing in line for food. But outside of that, they tried to do a really good job of keeping everybody safe and kind of separate and distance from everybody.
Now, you have had experience at two previous games, so I'm curious, other than what you've mentioned, were there any other major differences that you saw or effects with these games versus previous?
Yeah, probably the biggest and the strangest one was having a big old stadium like that with nobody in the stands there to cheer us on, or the home team. So we had, I don't know how many seats, probably 15, 18,000 or so. And the fact that it was dead empty made for a bit of an odd feeling. I mean, even when there are fans in the stands, I kind of don't even pay attention to the fact that there's that many people around and you're just focused on the game and the task at hand. But this time around was actually kind of nice because we were fortunate enough to be playing indoors in an air-conditioned venue, unlike some of the athletes that are outside in the 30 and 40 degree heat. And so that was a big benefit, even not having the fans there, because if you have all those bodies in there, it's going to heat up the venue. So we were able to keep nice and cool. And the fact that we could actually hear our teammates and our coaches when you're out on the court instead of the thousands of other voices cheering for you actually made it, I think, I'm trying to look on the bright side, but it made it a bit easier to play our game out there.
Now, you had a fifth place finish at these games in Tokyo. Moving forward, what does your team need to do to move forward and to be able to hopefully get a better place than a fifth place finish for the next games?
That's a bit of a tough one. I think the biggest thing, I don't know that Canada has dropped off at all. This is probably one of the strongest teams that I've been a part of this far in my career. But all of these other teams in the last 5 years since we've seen them last have taken such big leaps and bounds and developed themselves in the sport. So even though we got a little bit better, these other teams have just progressed so much further and started to develop a little bit more. So I think the key for us at this point is just trying to get more athletes out into the sport and have a larger pool of athletes to draw from and to push each other. So, I mean, just getting some younger, newer athletes out there and hopefully just build the community and raise the awareness and get some exposure for our sport.
Were there any sort of lessons learned for you personally during these games that you think you'll be able to take forward to future events?
The biggest shift I think I made in these games versus the other ones is I went in with a bit of a different attitude. And yes, there's still a lot of pressure on us to perform and to win. But I told myself that win, lose, or draw, I just wanted to come into these games and try and enjoy every moment and take it in as much as I possibly could. Because I feel like that's something that I was lacking to do in the last few games. And I was at this lifetime or the opportunity of a lifetime. And I'm not sure I enjoyed it as much as I could have based on our results and other things. So this time around, I wanted to make sure that I really just enjoyed the whole experience.
Now, before you got on the air, we were talking about wheelchair rugby and whether or not we would want to play it ourselves. And it kind of came up that, you know, one of us wasn't so sure. And for myself, I was kind of sure that I wanted to try it. But we kind of got into the equipment of the game. Do you have any sort of protective wear that you have? Because, you know, they call it murder ball for a reason. So, yeah, we're just kind of wondering if you have any more protection than just the chair itself.
I was going to say, the chair actually does a surprisingly good job of keeping us safe. The way that they're constructed, they're designed to not tip over very easily, so you're not going to be falling over, getting run over very often. There's the anti-tip bars, so you can't fall backwards. And the way that they're built, there's really no way of getting your hand or anything squished in between with the camber on the wheels being angled outwards. And outside of the chair, really the only protective equipment we have are the gloves. But that's more so just for having a better grip on the ball and a little more grip for pushing your wheels and braking. But at the same time, it obviously protects your hands from some blisters and skin breakdown. So outside of that, I guess you'll see some athletes will have arm sleeves on. Same thing if sometimes you end up using your elbow to slow your wheel a little bit or as your brakes. So people put arm sleeves on so they can use that and make sure they're not burning holes in their skin or anything on their forearms. But other than that, I can't think of anything really that we'd be using for protection.
Well, I think for me, son, yep, I would love to try wheelchair rugby. I think it'd be a fun sport to play.
See, Josh, now you don't have to mind your fingers because he said you're okay because your fingers are pretty well protected. So you'd be able to keep all your all your fingers, likely. Did he change your mindset or you still know?
I don't know. I'm still probably a no, but I will grant you the time that I tried wheelchair rugby was probably back in the mid 90s. So it's probably changed a lot since I had my experience with it.
Yeah, the chairs have come a long way since then, for sure.
Zach, thank you so much for joining us today. And even though it wasn't necessarily the desired result, congratulations on a fifth place finish, and you guys represented Canada well.
Amazing. Thank you guys so much.
That was Zach Mundell, who is a three-time Paralympic athlete in the sport of wheelchair rugby. Coming up next, we're going to continue the conversation surrounding parasports. I'm going to get the feeling from the gang as to what sports they've been enjoying. Plus, then we're going to talk a little bit about Alison Levine apologizing to the country for her, quote, poor result. What does that mean? We'll discuss on the other side of the break. Right after this, you're listening to The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. Welcome back to The Neutral Zone right here on AMI Audio. I'm your host, Brock Richardson, joined by Josh Watson and Cam Jenkins. Well, we started the conversation a little bit on para sports that we've enjoyed, and I mentioned the track and Brent Lakatos, and we talked about the rain and how much that would impact. Guys, I want to get your take on what exactly you have been enjoying watching and what we make of Canada's performance with 2 days left to go. Josh, start with you, and then Cameron.
Well, I have appreciated the fact that the Paralympics have been in Tokyo, if for no other reason than the time difference. I've actually been able to sit and watch some events after work rather than having to try and record Paralympic daytime or any of those. For me, I think the sports that I've been most drawn to are the athletic competition, because of course I am a shot put, javelin, and discus thrower, but I also know a number of members of Team Canada because of that. So I've enjoyed that competition. I've enjoyed seeing the swimming competitions, having been part of this show and talking to Danielle Doris, we can now call her the multi-medalist. And as you know, Brock, from our texts back and forth, I've really been intrigued by your former sport of bocce. There's so many different facets to it and different rules and different ways of propelling the ball, and it's really, really fascinating. So I've enjoyed that. Now, unfortunately, with the bocce competition, I have not been awake when Canada has played any of their matches, so I can't claim to know how Alison or Denik or Julian has performed, because I haven't seen them live. I've only seen highlights. But yeah, it's been really fascinating to key in on some sports that I don't normally watch.
Yeah, and for myself, a lot of the sports that Josh had talked about, the athletics, definitely been watching that. I've been really intrigued by the archery and how they shoot a bow and arrow, basically. They're doing it with sometimes their feet and using their toes to be able to stretch the bow back and then be able to shoot the arrow. Sometimes they're using their mouths as well. So archery has been really interesting to watch. The sitting volleyball, I was watching that and watching the Canada and China game today. And China's a powerhouse in sitting volleyball, but just to be able to, compare it from when I was in high school and playing and sitting down to be able to play. And that to me was really interesting as well. And then the hand cycling, I believe they call it as well, going around the velodrome. To me, that was phenomenal as well, kind of watching that sport. And yeah, and the hand bikes for the long racing, watching that too. And we even watched, it escapes me, but when you do three, like the swimming, the running, and the bicycling, the triathlon.
Yeah.
Triathlon. And I was watching the Canadian do that, and that was unbelievable. Just watching that as well. And I was watching, it was the blind triathlon. And so they had guides as well. So just be able to watch them do that. And they have to just, like, they don't, it's no different than the Olympics in that, yes, they have a disability and they're blind, but that's what they've been doing their entire life. Just like an Olympian has been doing most of their life as well and trying to get to the highest level. And yeah, I'm just amazed at the camaraderie of the athletes and just the effort that they put into it to be able to get to that high level. So yeah, I've been trying to get a really good grasp of all of the sports and watching it and just kind of learning something new every day.
Yeah. And I
that's
think
a really that's... good point. That's a really good point, Cameron. I had forgotten about the track cycling, as they call it, and the story of Kate O'Brien, the member of the Canadian bobsleigh team, who then took up able-bodied track cycling and then had that just horrific crash, which now has resulted in her becoming a Paralympian. Like, I've said to Brock, it would be really fascinating for me if we had a chance to talk to her someday, because that's just an amazing story in itself.
Hint, hint, nudge, nudge to producer Brock Richardson over there about
just getting, a little one
getting guests on.
There's just so many stories, though. You have the refugee team, and at first they weren't allowed to come, and then they were able to come. You know, we talked about in the headlines with the first gold medal in India for the Paralympics as well. So there's just so many great stories out there that happened this Paralympics. And it's been all under the COVID-19 or the pandemic as well. So, yeah, I just think it's been a fascinating couple of weeks, and I'm really looking forward to the last couple of days of it.
There's a couple that I'd like to highlight, and one is just when I watched this on Paralympic daytime, and I saw this individual, and I'm talking about Greg Stewart. He is in the shot put event, and my goodness, that guy is 6 foot. You know, and
7'2".
I knew we were getting. I knew there was a seven in there somewhere. I thought it was 6'7", but 7'2". And when you watch him get into that circle and just spin around and throw it, it is incredible. And he won his first gold medal at his first Paralympic Games. That guy is built like a brick house, and I'm so glad I was able to watch his throw, because man, it was so intriguing to watch. Just his, and it was effortless, guys. Like, it was just like, I'm just going to throw this, you know, 9 meter or 9 and then 11 meter. Like, it was incredible how far he could just chuck it. Like, and it was so effortless, Josh.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I've been lucky enough to be at events that Greg has thrown at, and he's a really nice guy, really gets along well with everybody. But yeah, he is an absolute giant. And I can recall the first time I saw him at an event, he walked past and I just kind of, I saw this shadow. I glance up like, oh, hello. Like, who are you up there?
Do you know what classification he is, Josh, by chance?
I'm trying to remember. He's an amputee, so he's missing part of one arm. So he's a 60 class for sure. I'm just Googling frantically as we talk to see if I can find the information. He's 7'2", 350 pounds. So he's definitely and a like, big boy.
But he's a stand-up, I guess. Continue, so he's not a sit-down like we are.
Most of that's muscle, folks. Correct. Like, I don't want to get the misnomer he's muscle. Like, you run into that, you're going to bounce back. Like,
we have muscles, too. I think our muscles are just called Molson muscles sometimes, so.
Mine's called cake. Maybe. That's what mine's called, for sure.
Fair enough.
I want to switch gears into this last topic because this is one we want to get into. Alison Levine went into the bocce competition ranked world number one, and she subsequently went to social media, Facebook, in fact, and said, "I tried, I'm sorry." And I want to understand from your perspective, how much pressure can be associated with the Paralympics, whether it be through us in the media, coaches, and is that apology really warranted? Josh, it was your headline, so I'm going to let you lead this conversation off.
Okay, note to self, we have 10 minutes on the nose. I absolutely feel bad for athletes when this happens, but I also get really, really passionate about this topic because it drives me absolutely insane that someone feels the need to apologize for their performance. You made the Paralympics. You were number one in the world. You have nothing to apologize for. Like, you are, at that time, going into this event, you are the best at this sport in your BC4 category. There is no reason to feel bad just because you had a bad day or a bad couple of days. We all go through things. We all have struggles at times. And unfortunately, sometimes we just have those struggles on the world stage. And it's painful to watch. But at the end of it all, only you and your coach know whether there are things you could have done differently, which would have resulted in a different ending, a different medal placing or a different like a different placing in the rankings. If that's coming from her coach, I'm sorry, you need a new coach. And I mean, I don't know her coach. I'm sure it didn't come from him. I'm sure it's just the emotions of the moment. And that's to me where the media comes into this, because how many times do we see an event end and immediately there's a microphone in somebody's face? Like,
right.
If I'm an athlete, I don't want your microphone in my face when I've just had the worst experience of my life, potentially. Because you go from the high of, I made the Paralympics, I'm competing for my country, to I just blanked the bed. And so you go from the highest high to the lowest low. And unless you have been a high performance athlete, I'm sorry, you have no right to actually comment at all on someone's performance. And I'll let somebody else have some words in edgewise.
Thanks, Josh. You know, I think that she was number one in the world for bocce, I believe. And I understand why she would be disappointed that she didn't get the result that she expected, being the overall number one. Saying that, I agree with Josh. She has absolutely no reason at all to apologize, because she gave it her best effort. She has been training and working hard for years, and she has nothing to be apologized for, because she tried her best, and that's what you do, is you try your best and you know, you've got to let the cards, or in this case, bocce balls, lay where they may. And I just feel heartbroken for her that she feels like she needs to apologize to the world about her performance, because she doesn't. She tried really hard. Like Josh said, she maybe had a bad day or a couple of bad games, and that's okay. That happens. And hopefully she's around for the next Paralympics and she's able to get a better result. But yeah, hopefully Allison is either listening or will listen to this, and she has absolutely nothing to be ashamed of. We are all proud of you being a Canadian Paralympian, and we are glad that you represent Canada so well, because before the games, she so eloquently said something on Twitter and it went viral. And I'm sure this one will go viral because, you know, she's what Canadiana is all about, you know, apologizing for no reason. And that's what a lot of Canadians do.
Let me piggyback on something that Josh said, because I really want to pull back the curtain in the bocce world, and quite frankly, most of the Paralympic world. When you are at World Championships, when you are at any international tournament aside from the Paralympic Games, there is virtually no media. When you get to the Paralympic Games, however, there is media at every venue, at every sport. Some have stronger presence of media than others. Bocce is kind of mediocre with their presence of media. And with Allison being number one, I am quite sure that she would have been inundated with interviews. And I want to paint the picture for the way that it works, at least for bocce. When you finish your game, the way you normally have to exit the court is that you have to pass through the media gallery, as they call it. And you cannot exit any other way other than through the media gallery. So all of Allison's games, she would have had to at some point exit through the media gallery. And a lot of the time, it's before you even get your emotions with you. You really have to get to the media, you know, the gallery, and talk to somebody. And they do shove microphones in your face. They literally spend time months before going over media availability and how to answer questions. But in the moment, sometimes it's really hard to come up with a succinct response that makes you sound professional when you are really upset about your result. And Canada as a whole did not have the results that they wanted. There's no medals coming back for bocce in any regime at all, which is fine because they got to represent the country, and that's fine. But I do believe there was a lot of pressure put on Allison herself to make this happen. And, you know, I think it's important for all athletes, because this is not the first time, not the last time I've seen it for other Paralympic Games, but this one especially. There's been other times where I've seen athletes apologize on Twitter. It's not necessary. And whoever's putting that pressure on athletes needs to stop almost immediately, because the people that are putting that pressure on them likely have never been to a Paralympic Games themselves. We've got about 3 minutes left on the clock. I just want to get your sense. Would you say that this Paralympic Games was a success for Canada? Yes or no? With maybe a little bit of thought. Cameron, start with you.
I'd say so. I think I saw today that we have 20 medals as of today. So far. So I think it is. I think the most we've ever gotten is 24, but I've thoroughly enjoyed these games. We've got a lot of medals, especially from the pool and the track, and I think it's been an absolute success.
I agree. I am a bit surprised that we only have the 20 medals. I personally, from what I knew, was expecting the ladies' wheelchair basketball team to do a little better. I think we were expecting the sitting volleyball to possibly medal as well. So I thought we were going to be closer to that 24, but this is still absolutely a successful games. And I am looking forward to Paris in 3 years.
And let's be fair about something. This was on the backdrop of a global pandemic. This is a games that was a year delayed, which helped training. I get all of that. But the fact that these games happened, the fact that we have 20 medals to date with two days left to go, is a success. And all of those Canadian athletes should be very, very proud of themselves. And I hope there is a solid, solid homecoming for this team, because that's one of the things that is the most fun about the Paralympic Games, is when you get home and it's like, we did it. We got through it. And Stephanie Dixon said it a couple of weeks ago. This isn't about the end result. This is about medals, or this is about the process versus the medals. That is the end of our show for this week. I'd like to thank Josh Watson, Cam Jenkins. I'd also like to thank our technical producer, Matt Agnew. Our technical supervisor is Paula Deneen. And our manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. Tune in next week, because you just never know what happens when you enter the neutral zone. Enjoy the Paralympics for the final 2 days. I'm sure it'll be great. Be safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.